And time now for Building Bridges with Ken Nash and Mimi Rosenberg.
This is Building Bridges, your community and labor report with Ken Nash and Mimi Rosenberg. And you were listening to Eddie Starr singing The Return of Coxey's Army, looking for solutions to the decline of power of the working class and to explore some solutions toward a revitalization of the labor movement. We welcome
Dr. Jessica Gordon-Nimhard, who is a political economist, assistant professor in the African American Studies Department at the University of Maryland.
Yes, hi.
And also we have Clarence Thomas, who is with the executive board of the International Longshore Workers, who is presently in Canada. Welcome, Clarence.
Peace and solidarity.
Again, we've been joined by our sister, Carol Myers, and brother, Daniel Vila.
And we also have Nadia Molina, who heads the Workplace Project, an organization which for years has provided solidarity and helped workers organize to defend their rights at the workplace.
And it should be an interesting discussion. I guess the question really to start with is what is to be done in terms of the issue of the working class here? And maybe I can start with Dr. Jessica Gordon-Nembhard. You do a lot of work on the issue of workers' cooperatives. And one of the issues that you raised with me was the question of job creation versus wealth creation. And maybe we can start our discussion by looking at the work that you're involved in.
Sources about our economic structures, which mean that job creation doesn't necessarily give people living wage or the benefits that they need or even any kind of economic prosperity, and definitely doesn't put people in a position to help accumulate wealth, which is really the best way to have economic security. And so I've looked at a variety of forms of worker ownership, workplace democracy, cooperative ownership, which really do allow us to help control over income security and wealth creation, as well as work rules, provide benefits, that kind of thing. In particular, I've been looking at how worker-owned cooperatives can actually increase the level, the quality of work in their industries. You have a great example, actually, in the Bronx with the Cooperative of Home Care Associates, which has organized over 300 black women and Latina home care workers into a worker-owned cooperative, where they're able to actually give all their members full-time work, which is actually unprecedented in the home worker arena. They also give themselves livable wages, paid vacations, health insurance, as well as being self-managed because they are worker-owned, though you don't have to be self-managed if you're worker-owned. You can hire managers. And they also do training for other home care workers in the city, so not just they don't just train their own members, and they replicate their model. They've been helping other groups replicate their model. Child Space is another one in Philadelphia, which does that in the child care arena. And again, what they've done is raise the level and the quality of child care jobs through a cooperative worker-owned business. And again, the workers are the ones who own the business. They make the work decisions. They're, again, able to pay themselves living wages, benefits. They also contribute to some savings funds and retirement funds. And so they're both, as owners of the business, they get dividends on their initial equity, and they also get their salaries, you know, based on how they've organized what the pay should be and what the benefits should be. I don't know if you want me to keep going.
No.
Hello, this is Clarence Thomas, and I'm speaking up because I'm here at a May Day celebration in Vancouver, British Columbia. But I would just like to say this, that the remarks that were just made by the sister, I think, are very encouraging. But we would be remiss if we did not understand the political realities of what workers are facing right now. We're facing an unprecedented attack upon workers' rights and the loss of jobs, which is unprecedented since the Great Depression. And there is a need for an independent political expression on the part of working people. And the only way that that can happen is independent mobilization. And that's the reason why the ILW Local 10 is calling for a Million Worker March in October 16th in Washington, D.C., because we believe the only time that there have been concessions made to working people in this country, such as like the civil rights movement and anti-war movement, is when action is taken independently of the Republican and the Democratic Party. And I think the only way that we're going to be able to create an environment to implement the programs that the sister was just outlining is if we take independent political action. And right now, when you look at the discussion going on between Kerry and Bush, the emphasis is clearly on Iraq, where they're spending $5 billion a month to wage this illegal war. And it's so ridiculous when you think in terms of the lack of programs that exist for working people. So I think that we cannot overlook the importance of worker mobilization. And in particular now, it does not matter who is elected in the next race for president. Working people are faced with privatization, outsourcing. As a matter of fact, here in Canada, where Canadians view themselves in terms of their characteristics as being the beneficiaries of socialized medicine, well, that is now being challenged because they are now privatizing hospital employees, and it's starting now in the support services, but it's aimed directly at creating a model of the United States. So this is a worldwide situation, and I think we need to be privy to this, and we need to take appropriate action.
And Nadia, could you also comment on the question asked by Mimi Rosenberg?
I did want to mention with regard to what was said before about cooperatives, that our experience has been that cooperatives can create an alternative and can allow workers to set their own working conditions. With house cleaners in particular, we've been able to establish cooperatives where house cleaners have established a living wage for themselves. Unfortunately, it's also difficult when these cooperatives are in competition with, basically, or in the middle of a situation where most employers are working under exploitation, where most employers are taking advantage of the fact that they can pay their workers less than the minimum wage if they feel they have to pay them at all. And so whether it's with house cleaners or with landscapers, we saw that when a cooperative tries to pay a living wage and when it tries to do the right thing, to obey labor laws, sometimes it's in a position where it's competing against the most unscrupulous of the employers. I wanted to give an example of something that we have going on right now with regard to unpaid wages, where we have a company, it's called Besser Roofing here in Long Island, for the Long Islanders out there who are listening, which when workers have made phone calls, letters, and flyering in his neighborhood, he owes over $25,000 worth of back wages to a group of 13 workers. And rather than sitting down to try to figure out how he could pay, he has threatened the workers and is now threatening to sue the organization in order to silence the workers and in order to silence their attempt to get simply the wages that they worked for. And so I think that the situation currently is that employers are used to being able to do whatever they want. And until that part of the equation is changed, it's going to be very difficult to implement the broader solutions like for economic justice.
And Dr. Jessica Gordon?
I was going to say, I actually think all the issues are related. I mean, it's clear that you can't do some of these alternatives without other kinds of mobilization. So I would agree, you know, the march in October, people need to be out for that because that also puts pressure on the traditional businesses which aren't being sensitive to these things. Also, you know, since I'm a researcher, one of the things I try to do is do more research which shows how workplace democracy actually can increase productivity so that we can also try to change the business attitude. But I think we also really need to make sure that we pressure government to put the right policies in place that can allow us to do the alternatives and to change the nature of the traditional businesses. So I would suggest that we probably have a lot of fronts to work on, a lot of fronts, to make sure we've got the research done so we know what's possible and what helps and what works. I think we need the mobilization to make sure the political will is put in the right place. And then, of course, we need the pressure on the institutions that are harder to change, both through mobilization and government policies. So I think we're all really talking about the same things. We're trying to figure out the best ways to get to them and the multiple strategies to get there.
Clarence, I have a question regarding the Million Worker March for October 16. As you know, throughout Latin America and probably most of the countries, when such marches are called, broad organizations, left organizations, popular organizations participate in these marches, and they really become people's or representatives of the entire working class. Unfortunately, in the United States, when we talk about labor or union marches, only we have a very narrow vision or concept of it, as if only union members can participate in them. And my concern would be, is there an effort, for example, to make outreach to other organizations which perhaps are not unions, but which we know may be interested in supporting the demands of labor, since, after all, most people who make up, for example, the base of the Urban League or the NAACP or whatever, are also labor, also workers. Is there an effort to make it broader and go beyond unions?
Yes, absolutely, because as you may know, there are less than 13 million members of unions in the United States, around 8 million, and so we're shrinking. This particular call is for organized and unorganized workers, as well as community organizations and faith-based organizations, because we think that for too long there has been a line of demarcation between organized and unorganized workers. We're all workers, and right now what we're experiencing is a race to the bottom. What that basically means is that it's playing out with regards to public service workers particularly, which are now being the focus of privatization, where workers that have benefited from the gains of their struggles in the public sector are now facing the fact that companies are now coming in, outsourcing work, offshoring jobs. So what we have is a situation where people are not only losing union status, but jobs that have been going to even non-union workers are now being sent out of the country. So this is a call to both organized and unorganized workers. And the fact of the matter is there are more unorganized workers than there are organized workers. So I would just want to say that for people who want to find out more about this, www.meandworkermarch.org.
Now, Nadia, I wanted to ask you about, when we last talked before this, it was about the immigration policy and what was going on with that. Have you seen any movement at all with regard to the possibility rectifying the situation in the United States with giving citizenship and other rights to people who are working here?
The most recent things that we're hearing at the national level, that there is a proposal from Kennedy and I believe Luis Gutierrez and some other legislators, which is going to bring together some of the most important areas of focus for the legalization campaigns, which have been that there should be not just a legalization program for the people that are here, but also worker programs for the workers who are going to be coming in. But unlike the supposed proposal that Bush was making about, 3 years for a guest worker visa and then you're out of here, the proposals are to create a temporary worker visa and that will be able to lead eventually to permanent residency and then to citizenship. So this proposal is the one that seems the most hopeful at this point, but who knows what's actually going to happen. And then at the state level, rather than things getting better, instead they're getting worse. What we're hearing the most about is the driver's license problem, where now the Department of Motor Vehicles sending out letters with basically Social Security number problems to the people who may have had driver's licenses for years and are basically creating problems so that they won't be able to renew them or won't be able to get licenses.
Well, going back to Dr. Jessica Gordon-Nemhard, I'm interested in the whole concept. Certainly we've seen that more abroad than here, I believe, really, of a worker democracy through cooperative organizing within the corporate structure. To what extent has this taken root? I mean, you and I had spoken earlier. I had assumed that there was a much greater empathy for us in the African-American community, given the role of the black churches and cooperative economic development, certainly coming as a demand within the nationalist community, etc. But to what extent is it taking root, and how do people kind of internalize the concepts and begin to work towards that end?
In the African-American community, there is a long and not well-known history of cooperatives, though there's not, I wouldn't say there's a significant number, but there's certainly examples in each period. In the 30s was actually a big period of cooperative ownership in the black community. Black farmers have used cooperative ownership as a long time as a strategy for survival. So there are examples. They're not well-known. There's never been good studies about why and how they survive or when they survive or even lessons learned about the failures, which there are also plenty of. And as Nadia explained, there's lots of reasons for failures, and some of them are just sabotage because of the traditional system. There's also, I think, every community pretty much has its examples of cooperative ownership. Actually, worker ownership is the smallest part of that, and I think probably because we're in a capitalist system so that it's harder to pull that off. And I think also it's a lot of the issues of funding issues, trying to capitalize industries, is very difficult. But I would say that what we have is a growing movement in terms of cooperatives in general. The National Cooperative Business Association talks about, I think, 40,000 co-ops in the U.S., from the really large dairy cooperatives to the very small ones. It's a growing movement. Credit union movement is very strong as well. And one thing I should mention that's coming up this month, May 24th to 26th, is the very first
conference on workplace democracy, which is basically being organized by worker-owned cooperatives in association with the International Movement of Worker-Owned Cooperation, which just put out their World Declaration on Cooperative Worker Ownership to define what it means. And the U.S. is about one of the only major countries that does not have a federation of worker ownership, and so we're having a first conference in Minneapolis May 24th to 26th to actually try to form a U.S. federation. So there is a growing movement. We've had regional meetings already. The West Coast has been having them for 10 years. The East Coast had their second one last summer. Midwest had their first one last year, and so that movement is growing. The whole movement is really consolidating itself in terms of starting to understand how to strengthen their position in terms of how to do self-management, how to make sure to do enough education to keep the co-ops going, how to work through the issues about hostile community or hostile other businesses, competition, how to make sure to be as effective a democratic unit as possible, all those kinds of things. And then, as I've hinted before, there's also some of us are continuing to do good research about how to understand how these entities work. The other thing I just want to mention in terms of the issue about privatization and jobs going overseas, I work in what I call democratic community economics, and I really believe that particularly in the age, global age, where jobs are going overseas and corporations are pretty footloose, that real economic development has to start at the local level, because that's where we can anchor jobs and anchor businesses if they're locally owned and community owned. And I think even in the face of privatization, if we think of privatization as a chance to do more community-based development and community-owned businesses, Italy is a place that has a good track record of how actually community-owned co-ops and worker-owned businesses took over the areas that were being privatized by the government, and so were able to make them sort of quasi-public as opposed to letting them go totally private.
And how can people find out more about your efforts?
The worker ownership just started their website, so that's www.usworker.coop, C-O-O-P, no hyphen. So that's the easiest way in terms of them. My work, you would have to email me personally or call me, so I can just give a quick email, is jnembhar@umd.edu.
And how about you, Clarence and Nadia? How can people reach you if they want more information? Clarence, why don't you start?
Yes. Well, as I mentioned, www.millionworkermarch.org. And I just also would like to say very quickly that in terms of being able to create the environment that we can begin to work on these cooperatives, we most certainly need to have a change in public policy. And that is the reason why we're calling for this Million Worker March.
Okay, thank you. And Nadia, about the Workplace Project?
Yeah, our telephone is 516-565-5377, and email is workplace@igc.org, especially if people are interested in volunteering as part of our unpaid wages movement.
Well, what can I say? Clarence Thomas, Executive Board Member, Local 10 International Longshore Workers Union, Nadia Molina from the Workplace Project, Dr. Jessica Gordon-Nemhart, you do terrific work. I think you've given us a great deal to think about. And, of course, we're all going to be on the Million Worker March, and we're going to make sure it's a Million Worker March.
Up the ante to 2 million, Clarence.
Oh, you are so spoiled, Ken. Or you have such aspirations, I should say.
1 million in October, 2 million in January. Whoever turns out to be president.
Workers of the world unite. You have nothing to lose but your chains.
All right.
Okay. Say hello to the Canadians for
right.
us.
Solidarity.
Indeed. And we're going to bring up a little bit of Pete Seeger in the background. And we do have to round up this programming. What song are we going to open up with? Oh, this land is your land.
Have to answer that.
Well, we're going to make it our land. This land is your land. This land must be our land, really controlled by the workers who have labored long and built it. Pete Seeger.
This land was made for you and me. This land is your land. This land is my land. followed my footsteps to the sparkling sands of her diamond deserts. While all around me a voice was sounding, this land was made for you and me. The sun came shining, and I was strolling, the wheat fields waving, and the dust clouds rolling, the fog was lifting, a voice was chanting, this land was made for you and me,
this land is yours.